SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, Hour 2 of Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. Probably going to have some trade news coming up here in just a second. If so, I'll hop off, hop back on, but we definitely have something brewing here. Two times in 3 days, Dave is here on the show. Like, I like trades that happen before and after that we can dissect, but it's strange to be in this position doing the show. Two times in 3 days, right? Right on the cusp of it, but we'll get to that in a second. What do you make thus far of the trades that you've heard so far in baseball? Exciting time, huh?
Super exciting time. And I feel like this was actually a great job by baseball because, you know, All-Star Game, Home Run Derby, the whole Shohei Ohtani experience. The baseball trade deadline is a big chance for them to capture the national attention when most people are not tuned into baseball. Most people are sitting there getting beat writer updates of their favorite NFL teams and their fantasy football teams. Of course, the NBA draft last night, that big Russell Westbrook trade. I mean, that Russell Westbrook trade would have been front, center, and the only story on SportsCenter or on our show had the Scherzer trade not done. But, like, honestly, I think in terms of how it shifts the championship stuff, the Scherzer trade is like a bigger deal. The Westbrook thing is kind of just like shifting chairs around. Like, everyone knows it's LeBron's team, but the Scherzer and Trey Turner deal, that's a huge deal. Like, the fact that they were able to add that is massive. And you know, the Westbrook thing is so fascinating to me because, first off, that contract was viewed as untradeable. Well, obviously, no contract is actually untradeable in the NBA. People said the Chris Paul contract was untradeable as well. Westbrook has been moved all these times. But I actually don't get this trade from Westbrook's perspective. And I also don't get it from the Lakers' perspective. Last year, Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope played 5,900 minutes. That's a lot of minutes that the Lakers are going to have to fill in their rotation. And they combined for a true shooting percentage of 59%. So that is above average. You know, that's free throws, that's dunks, that's three-pointers, that's everything. I love Russell Westbrook. He is an amazing player. I will never say anything bad about him, especially not on TV where it's recorded. But Westbrook last year was a 50.4% true shooting player. And the fact that he's going to be playing with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, it's going to take the ball out of his hands, or it's going to take the ball out of LeBron James's hands. LeBron James, not a great spot-up three-point shooter. Russell Westbrook, really bad spot-up three-point shooter. And Anthony Davis has gotten better at shooting three-pointers, but he's not amazing at it. So, like, I don't really actually get the marriage between the Lakers and Russell Westbrook. Like, I don't understand why this was the trade they made. I feel like if they wanted to do this deal and trade away a 2028 first-round pick and Kyle Kuzma, why don't they ask for Beal? Like, Bradley Beal is the way better fit next to LeBron James than Russell Westbrook. And maybe the Wizards said, you know, no dice. Like, we think we can get three first-round picks and a young guy in addition. But I don't know. I do not love that trade for the Lakers.
Yeah, and for me, I think when I look at it, it feels, Davis, like when you have a team that is so close to winning a championship with a player like LeBron James, who I would guess, has 3 years left? I mean, I don't know. I mean, some people think he's going to play five, but I would say like 3 years left. They kind of have to go for it. And we see teams like this in sports doing that. And I think that that's a big part of what happens in sports. So no doubt. In terms of the Jose Berríos trade, let's get back to that for a second, Davis. Berríos to the Toronto Blue Jays. Blue Jays are going to be sending Austin Martin, one of the top 10 picks in last year's draft. What did you think of that? And do you think that that's the kind of deal that can put the Jays over the top?
You know, I don't think it's going to, like, put them over the top. I don't think this turns them into, like, oh, for sure they're making the playoffs. For sure they get to the wild card. I don't think that's true. But I think it was an important deal for them to make. And I just was kind of thinking, like, who is the person that wants the Blue Jays to do well? What would their response to this trade be? And the response to the trade should be, like, this is awesome. We're going for it. We're doing something. I mean, as a sports fan, what you want, I guess you either want two things. You either want your team to be accumulating as many assets as possible so you can win for the future, or using all those assets to try and win a championship. So, like, right, I'm rooting for the Thunder. I kind of sucked they didn't take any players I actually liked in that draft, but they added three first-round picks. That's awesome. Presti buying himself another year in my fandom, whereas I'm the Blue Jays. We're bad for a long time. We have the number 5 overall pick. Now we have all these young, exciting guys. We need to get these guys signed to contracts, and we need to be adding starting pitching to support them. So I feel like you got to just live a little bit and enjoy the trade for what it was.
All right. Well, I thought we would have a deal now. It may be in a little bit. We'll have it for you coming up a little bit later on the show, hopefully. I don't know. I think we're very close. Regardless of that, Jib Sanis is going to join us. We're going to talk some fantasy football next. Then Pat Corain will join us, and we'll come back and wrap up the show with a little fantasy or reality. So make sure you stay with us and stay on the grid. Craig Mish and Davis Maddock right here on Fantasy Sports Today. So don't go away as we come back. More fantasy sports talk, wagering talk, as we take you all the way up until 2 o'clock Eastern right here on FST. Also, don't forget to download our podcast over on iTunes and Android, Google Play as well, as we get you all the way through this trade deadline and into the fantasy football season. So stay with us here. Follow us on SportsGrid, at SportsGrid, and, of course, at Craig Mish, at Davis Maddock. We'll be back in just 2 minutes. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We'll be back next week, and Jim Sanis and I will be previewing the next race. But we thought, of course, with fantasy football in full swing, the game coming up, and ends around the country reporting to training camp, we'd get our first look on Jim's thoughts, of course, on the fantasy football season. Of course, at Jim Sanis and all of his work over at Number Fire. Jim, it is great to catch up with you again. Hope you had a decent time off there. I know you had about a week off or so. Nice little trip. You look great. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, it was nice, and I was grateful that the NFL and NASCAR decided to be cohesive here and give me 2 weeks off for NASCAR to focus on NFL training camp reports, because those matter a lot. So I'm grateful that this aligned the way it did, and excited to get back to NASCAR then. But for now, I'm grateful for the break, lining up well with the NFL schedule.
Yeah, definitely so. And next week, forget about it. That's all we'll be talking about here. Once the baseball trade deadline is over today, Jim, I can take a step back and look at that. I'm in this Razz Bowl now. I don't know. Are you involved in this Razz Bowl draft by any chance?
I am not. I've had it's been a weird drafts. Year for season long, because I have Byron Buxton in every league. So I've checked out for a bit. It seems
okay. All right. So let's get into the first week of training camp this week. Coming to a close. I'll start with this, Jim, because Davis and I have talked quite a bit about virtually every topic. Let's start with this question to you. What piece of information or news that you think may have been flying under the radar a little bit this week that caught your attention, that may have altered your thinking on a player this fantasy football draft season?
Yeah, it's just in general, you want to keep an eye on who's running with which team. And I think that that's important, especially for the rookies. If you find rookies who are in situations where they're already getting first team reps, that's a massive deviation for their expectation, because a lot of times teams will come in with this mindset of, okay, you gotta earn it. Justin Jefferson last year, the Vikings didn't start the first couple of games because Mike Zimmer hates rookies. So when you have rookies who are already earning first team reps, that to me is very noteworthy. So seeing guys like Trey Sermon and Michael Carter getting good run with their respective first teams, that to me is very interesting. So I've taken note of that. I don't know if it necessarily has flown under the radar, but to me, that's a big story. Try to find guys who are working ahead of expectations. The other one being Devontae Smith with the Eagles, not with the first team. That was expected, but being like kind of the, I don't know, like the leader of that wide receiver group. So to me, it's the rookies. Devontae Smith, Michael Carter, Trey Sermon, seeming like they're going to have roles early on for their team based on the way they've been utilized early in the training camp practices.
Yeah, and I saw Carter play in college. I want to focus on him here for a second, because we're all trying to find that late round running back that we grab in the 12th round or 14th round, Jim, and and that James Robinson, an undrafted guy that we can find that can play, that we could play 5 weeks in a fantasy football season. I liked at times what I saw from Carter. I know that a lot of his numbers were like sort of over the course of a few games, but the Jets are like a wide open canvas right now. They finally got their quarterback signed. They, of course, are going to go with Mims here, a second-year receiver, maybe first-year running back in Carter. Have you found yourself taking him or anything?
I hadn't been, because I was skeptical he would get the first team reps. We know that the coaching staff has familiarity with Tevin Coleman. So I kind of thought that Coleman might get run early on. They had LaMichael Perine as a carryover as well. So I was skeptical he would be, you know, in that first team mix. I am changing my tune totally here with Michael Carter as a result of what we've seen here with him running with the first team. He's going around 92nd right now, and I think that's fair enough. We can actually view him as being a value right now. I bumped him up to 86 in my rankings. So not like a massive, massive value, but I was under market on him before. Now I'm over market as a result of what we've seen here. Like you said, really talented guy in college, missed a lot of tackles, part of that dynamic 1-2 punch. And we saw him get some work in the passing game, which I need for my running backs too. So I'm moving him up a bit right now, and I'm open to moving him up more depending on reports of the offensive line cohesion with the Jets, depending on how Elijah Vera Tucker does at left tackle, depending on what Zach Wilson looks like now that he's finally out there and ready to go. So I think that I'm willing to move him up more, but for right now, where things stand, I am still ahead of consensus, whereas I was not before.
Very interesting. Let's continue the running back focus, and the other name that you mentioned in Trey Sermon, who played at Ohio State. His numbers were, I would say, over the course of the season, okay, a little underwhelming. Like, you know, they played a shorter season, so I don't know that you could really look at those and compare them to a full season. And he definitely does not have the same fanfare that J.K. Dobbins did coming out of Ohio State. But as you mentioned, Sermon involved in the offense. Raheem Mostert, though, Jim, is still there, still lurking. When Mostert is healthy, not banged up, getting 25 carries a game, the guy's getting 100 yards and a touchdown. How do you see that playing out with him this season?
Yeah, I think that the way that it's sounded so far is they want to use Trey Sermon early on as like the word they used was tenderizer to kind of soften up the defense. And that's really interesting to me, because if we can get the guy who's going to get work early on for this team, they might not give it up, because that offensive line is disgusting. I think it is underrated. It's viewed favorably, but I think it is arguably a top three offensive line in football. Mm-hmm. So if you give me carries for a talented running back behind that offensive line, it's possible he won't look back. So Trey Sermon right now, going 75th overall. I've got him at pick 65, so about 10 picks ahead there. And again, if the reports continue to be good, I'm open to moving him up more. This is going to be a good offense, whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo or Trey Lance. I don't care. They've got great receivers, great offensive line. Most quarterbacks can be good in that system. And if you got a good quarterback paired with a running back who can get some solid work, that's going to lead to touchdowns. That's what I want here. So I'm open to Sermon. You know, the college numbers overall weren't great, but I saw him rack up like 400 rushing yards against Northwestern, my Northwestern Wildcats, in the Big Ten championship game, which was very upsetting. So maybe it's just like a bias as a result of that, lingering over in being in favor of Sermon to justify what he did to my team in college.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see. And obviously we play our favorites and not, no doubt. Interesting comments, I thought, a couple of days ago, Jim, with Carson Wentz reporting to Indianapolis Colts training camp, and some of the things that he had to say, feels rejuvenated. And I mean, obviously he's saying all the right things. And boy, if I knew Wentz was playing 16 games this season, Jim, and I knew that he looked even like a shell of what he did a couple of years ago, I mean, the ADP is just would be so off on him, but I'm that's the kind of stuff when I hear it, I'm hesitant until I actually see it. But I suppose we'll have to wait to the second or third preseason game. What did you think about those comments?
Yeah, I think that it makes sense he's saying this stuff because, you know, why wouldn't you? But I think the thing that gives me a tiny bit of pause is we're generally viewing Indianapolis as being this great offensive system. And, you know, they are. My concern is that they might not have a left tackle for the first four games. And I'm saying, you know, they might not have a left tackle. They're going to have someone physically standing there. But until Eric Fisher gets healthy, it's not going to be a good situation there. So that's still going to be a good offensive line. They are solid left guard through right tackle. But if you're going to miss out on one spot, I wouldn't want it to be left tackle. So you're going there. You've got some unproven, I would say, pass catchers outside of T.Y. Hilton. It might not be as good of a surrounding situation as Carson Wentz, or as we may have thought with Carson Wentz going to Indianapolis. So that's my one concern that I have as of right now is there's a possibility the situation is being overrated. If you could tell me, I mean, that's like if I'm looking at my like win total projection, not looking at fantasy, the widest range of outcomes in my head is Indy. I have no idea what to expect here. And a lot of that is because of Carson Wentz. You know, can he rebound with quality players around him once again? You tell me, Craig. I don't know. It's a really tough question to answer, but it does dictate so much. And I think that's the tough part here is it dictates the value on Jonathan Taylor, on T.Y. Hilton, Michael Pittman, Paris Campbell. There's so many guys who are dependent on Wentz, and it does make me a bit nervous not knowing what to expect out of him specifically.
Yeah, and trend-wise, and look, you know, sometimes trends matter, sometimes they don't, but you're not going to find many NFL organizations that go through three quarterbacks in 3 years as starters and then make the playoffs. It doesn't happen. But look, I thought last year that Indy was done. I thought Rivers was done. He was done at the end of the year, but they ended up winning more games than I thought. Your rankings, just as simple, Jim, is going to numberfire.com. Is that as easy as it gets for people this season?
Yep, go to numberfire.com, check out the draft kit, and click on expert rankings. Not sure why mine are in the expert rankings, but they are there. I promise that they're there. So just go to the expert rankings. They're there with mine, JJ Zacharyson's, and Brandon Gadula's as well.
All right, Jim Sannis, follow him on Twitter. Good to have Jim back after a couple-week hiatus. We'll have him join us again next week. We'll focus in on some NASCAR and also talk some fantasy football throughout the season. We'll take a quick break here on Fantasy Sports Today. We got plenty more to come, more fantasy football talk in this hour. Latest on the Major League Baseball trade deadline. We'll give you the very latest as we're just a few hours away from that happening. We'll be back with more Fantasy Sports Today right here on Sports Grid in just 2 minutes. So stay on the grid. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid TV. I am Davis Maddock, joined by my friend Pat Corain from NBC Sports Edge, and we are here to discuss a topic very near and dear to our hearts, which is the rookie quarterbacks this year in fantasy football. It's become, in our little very small, very niche corner of the internet, it has really become a meme that that rookie quarterbacks are kind of the skeleton key to figuring out the position this year. We, of course, have Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville, Trey Lance in San Francisco, Zach Wilson with the New York Jets, Justin Fields with the Chicago Bears, and hopefully for my James White best ball shares, Mac Jones sooner rather than later in New England. So, Pat, why don't you explain a little bit how these rookie quarterbacks have become so popular in fantasy football?
Well, they've become so popular, I think, for two reasons. One, this is an exceptional quarterback class. We don't see this many quarterbacks drafted this early very often. And we have this interesting mix of, you know, the guys that the fantasy football community was really excited about, you know, like Justin Fields in particular, right? He falls. But then there's guys that we were maybe a little bit more suspect of heading into the draft with incredible draft position now attached to them, Zach Wilson and Trey Lance. And then obviously Trevor Lawrence, big things from And as you mentioned, Mac Jones is interesting, not so much as a fantasy asset in his own right, but because of the way he can maybe transform that Patriots offense, get us some more passing volume overall, really help out the running back reception. So all of these guys are very interesting. And then you also have this dynamic where in fantasy drafts this year, there's this clear kind of elite tier of quarterbacks that tends to go in the mid rounds. That kind of, like, once you get down into the ninth round or so, that's where you start to see Burrow and those types of guys. So it tapers off. But if you don't want to take a quarterback in the 5, 6, 7 range, then these rookie quarterbacks offer you a different path to where you can still be loading up on skill players in those really high value rounds. And you can get a guy like Lawrence, who we know is going to start the entire season and has some rushing upside. You can get a guy like Wilson, who we know is going to start the entire season and has, I think, a little bit of underrated, you know, Ryan Tannehill-esque rushing upside there as well. And then you look at Justin Fields and Trevor and Trey Lance, and the rushing upside, you know, combined with the passing ability, if we get enough starts out of them, is really massive. So the reason that there's so much talk about these guys is because they give you a lot of flexibility in drafts, and there's real reasons to be excited about their upside as rookies.
So let's start with Trevor Lawrence, because I feel like the market is just sort of assuming Trevor Lawrence is going to be really good. Obviously, he was very good at Clemson. While he was there, he threw 90 touchdowns and 17 interceptions with a 164 quarterback rating, 8.9 yards per attempt. Like, he was very good. So I guess the question is he a very good quarterback, or is he a generational quarterback? Because I have concerns that if he is merely very good and not generational, first off, you know, his rookie year will probably be his worst year if he's just very good. And so there'll be a little bit more interceptions, more sacks and things like that as a rookie. But then also, we don't feel that confidently about the coaching staff, or at least I don't. I don't feel that strong about Urban Meyer or about Daryl Bevel. Now, I do think they've done a good job of getting talented players around him. DJ Chark, LaVisca Chenault, Marvin Jones, Travis Etienne, I think are all very talented, good weapons to be giving a rookie quarterback. Where are you at on the, you know, the very good to generational spectrum for Trevor Lawrence?
I'm trying to keep an open mind with all these guys, and in Trevor Lawrence's case, it's keeping an open mind that he might not be as good as everyone seems to think. So I'm not convinced he's a generational guy, but I'm also not sure that he needs to be to have a strong rookie year. I mean, we saw a great rookie year from Robert Griffin III, right? You get these guys who, like, may not quite as have defenses. He's taking off and running a little bit more, and he's very fast. So there is potential for him to add a lot with his legs, to some extent, maybe add a little bit more with his legs as a rookie, you know, if he isn't able to get to his third read, right? So I think that he's still a pretty strong bet, almost regardless of how good he ultimately gets. I agree. I think the coaching staff is a little bit of a concern for the overall quality of the offense, although I think Bevel is a competent offensive coordinator, so I wouldn't expect them to kind of ruin the opportunity they have here with Lawrence. And I think the major advantage that Lawrence has on the rest of the rookie class is that we can really expect some dual threat ability, you know, above the level of like a Zach Wilson. And we know we're getting a full season of starts, which
full season.
He's going sometime Trey Lance, where there's some real concern with Lance about how many starts we're even going to get.
Yeah, so that is a good natural transition to number 3 overall pick in the draft, Trey Lance. Just this week, you know, apparently Kyle Shanahan has said it's not a QB competition right now. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be the starter. You don't love to hear that, especially Trey Lance is my most drafted quarterback thus far in best ball. Now, a big part of that was, you know, I was doing drafts back in May and everything, and Trey Lance was going much later in drafts. Then, you know, the market has definitely realized just how good he could be for fantasy as a starter because he is such a good rusher. My thinking is that as long as Jimmy is playing well, I feel like Shanahan and that coaching staff is kind of like, if they are 6-2, Jimmy is not hurt and Jimmy is not turning the ball over, which has definitely been a problem with him before. I do feel as if I mean, there is at least some threat of a redshirt year for Trey Lance, and I think that you disagree with that sentiment.
No, I think there's some threat, but I think we're getting to a point where the threat might start to get overblown in people's minds, as Kyle Shanahan says a lot of things that are nice about Jimmy Garoppolo, as of course he's going to do as we enter training camp. But the fact is, these guys are going to be splitting reps with the ones. This is a quarterback competition for week one, regardless of whatever Shanahan says, or they wouldn't be splitting reps with the ones. And even what Shanahan is saying is that, you know, he's saying he told Jimmy that when he's at the top of his game, there's no rookie who's going to come in here right away and take your job. Well, he might not be at the top of his game. You know, to me, this is sort of Shanahan protecting himself, setting Jimmy up for, you know, if he's throwing a bunch of interceptions, as he has at times in camp, or if he has a really rough outing or season, then Jimmy, it's sort of Jimmy hasn't held up his end, and they can kind of easily transition to Lance. I agree with you. If they're absolutely rolling and Jimmy Garoppolo is playing really well, they're not going to force Lance in there. But when you're drafting Lance, you're betting on him to be this incredible talent right away in the NFL. And if that's the case, the coaches are going to be noticing that and seeing what they have. And so I think in the cases where, you know, you're drafting Trey Lance in your best ball teams and it ultimately fails, I think that may reflect to some degree how good Trey Lance even is. So I'm still comfortable betting on Trey Lance, the talent, because I think if you're right about that talent, he ultimately is going to force his way on the field. Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't think will be able to keep up a level of play to keep Lance off if Lance really is the guy we think he can be.
Yeah, and my actual favorite rookie quarterback is not Trevor Lawrence, it's not Trey Lance, it's not Zach Wilson. I think there is a decent chance that not only is Justin Fields the best fantasy quarterback of this group this year, but that he is the best NFL quarterback out of all of them, that his athleticism and his accuracy, like, obviously Trevor Lawrence got all the plaudits. He was so good at Clemson, you know, what won the national title as a true freshman and all of those things. But, you know, Justin Fields was incredible at Ohio State. And in 2019, 137 rushing attempts, 10 rushing touchdowns. He ran a 4.4 flat at the NFL Combine. Like, just an otherworldly athlete. They do have, I mean, they have weapons in Chicago. Allen Robinson, a great number one wide receiver. They have Darnell Mooney, their deep guy. I don't love them trading away Anthony Miller, but it looked like they were never going to play him. Cole Kmet, who knows? You know, I think he might be pretty good. And I actually feel like an inefficiency in the draft market right now is Fields going not even later, but like much later than Trey Lance. And I think you could compare their rushing upsides. Lance probably scores more touchdowns. Fields probably rushes for more yards. But Fields seems like a strong favorite to start more games than Trey Lance at this point.
I agree. I think Fields is going to start more games, despite the fact that I think the 49ers are more open to Lance starting games, but the competition ahead of Fields is so much weaker with Andy Dalton. And yeah, Matt Nagy, I think, pretty clearly would like Andy Dalton to start most, if not all, the season and then go to the playoffs with Andy Dalton. But the odds of that happening are so, so low that I think, you know, probably by week 4 or 5, we're ultimately going to see Justin Fields get on the field. And I've actually started to get my exposure down to Trey Lance in best ball a little bit by seeing if I can get Fields a little bit later, because I agree with you. It's an inefficiency. These guys are pretty close in terms of the upside that they can provide you. And if Fields is more likely to play more games, which I think is right, then, you know, they should really be going very, very close to each other. The Fields discount is something I'm really trying to take advantage of right now.
Yeah, you know, and Fields, I think, was kind of unfairly maligned in the draft process. Like, the fact that he fell to 9 or fell to 11 in the NFL draft, I actually think is being baked in to his fantasy football ADP, because people are remembering, you know, the hit jobs that were coming out to explain why Justin Fields was falling, to explain why he was going after Zach Wilson, to explain why the 49ers wanted Trey Lance instead of Justin Fields. So I definitely think it's important to keep those things in mind. We definitely like Justin Fields here on the show. We are going to go ahead and run into break here real quick on Fantasy Sports Today. Stay tuned to Sports Grid TV. I will be rejoined by Craig Mish here in just a few moments on Fantasy Sports Today.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Everyone, and welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid TV. I am Davis Manick. I'll be joined here for our Fantasy or Reality segment by our friend George Kurtz. Craig had to step out of the office. And, you know, George, before we get into that, though, I want to get some of your reactions to how thick and fast it has been, the MLB deadline. Just as we were doing the show, we had Jose Berríos traded to the Toronto Blue Jays, a top prospect from the Blue Jays system going back there. Sounds like Byron Buxton is probably going to be traded today. Unclear. I saw the Mets as one of the teams. I think the Mets would make a ton of sense because they have the money to pay him. I mean, is this one of the most exciting MLB trade deadlines ever, George?
It's been a pretty wild last 24 hours, right? I mean, what's going down here? I don't want to say it's been the best ever. We always say that, then we realize, oh, yeah, remember 10, 12 years ago, da-da-da. But it seems to be, I mean, nuts is what's going on here. Gallo goes, Rizzo goes, Scherzer and Turner probably going. I don't think that's been completed yet, last I checked. Berríos gone. Maybe Buxton goes. Where are all the Cubs going? You know, Brian, Baez, Kimbrel. It's been fun. I mean, it's been a fun day to watch. So it's been – I probably didn't expect this amount of stars to go. You know, I think we're going to get a lot of trades, but not this amount of stars. And I'm probably surprised – you know, Blue Jays, you're going for it with Berríos. You're pretty far behind here. A lot of teams you got to overcome. Does he really solve your problem? I understand you can hit yourself. You can beat anybody with your offense, but a little surprised they made that big a move for him. You know, the Dodgers going for it. No, it's what they do. What's their payroll at now? $276 million, assuming this gets completed. So it's been a wild 24 hours.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where Chris Bryant goes. You know, I do think probably there are a couple teams in the National League that could use his services, the Mets. Again, Craig and I were just talking about it, but I mean, this was supposed to be the new look Mets. This was supposed to be no more Madoff Mets. They were supposed to be spending money and bringing guys in. And, you know, well, we benefit of the doubt, they have three more hours to make some things happen. But I think this is a good natural transition because the Los Angeles Dodgers traded for Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. They also were able to add Danny Duffy, who, you know, some people might not know, but Danny Duffy can really crank it up. I've watched him his entire career in Kansas City, and I think he will give them some good relief innings in the postseason. So very simply, George, the Dodgers are World Series bound, fantasy or reality?
Listen, I think the Dodgers got a good shot. I'm not going to tell you they're definitely the World Series. It's going to be tough this year because you think about it. You know, getting out of their own division, you know, assuming they win the division, which is going to be a must because you don't want to play that one game wild card against San Diego or against the Giants. But assuming they win their division, you still might have to against the Brewers, Peralta, Woodruff, Burns. That's not fun. You know, if the Mets can get their act together, if DeGrom can get healthy, DeGrom, Stroman, Walker, who knows what Carrasco will give you. It could be interesting whether the Dodgers are the better team here. But it won't be a cakewalk for the Dodgers. If you force me to pick somebody, yeah, I'm going with a $276 million team. But nothing's gone right for them this year. I mean, come on, it's every other day they have an injury. Bellinger can't stay healthy for more than a week at a time. Betts is now out. Maybe he's back this weekend. So they do seem to be a team that's a little bit cursed this year as far as injuries. But that being said, I do think they're the best team when healthy in the National League, if not all of baseball.
You know what? You actually make a very convincing point there, which is that this really has not been the Dodgers season. I mean, right? Gavin Lux has been banged up. Corey Seager has been banged up. Bellinger's been banged up. Mookie Betts has been banged up. They've been having to rely on guys they never thought they were going to have to rely on. Billy McKinney now on his third team this year. Zach McKinstry getting a lot of plate appearances for them. Matt Beattie getting a lot of plate appearances, having to sign guys like Yuichi Tsutsugo and Albert Pujols off of waivers. Austin Barnes, their backup catcher. Luke Raley. If I told you that Luke Raley was going to get 150 plate appearances for this Dodgers team, you would have said, well, what happened? Like, did they decide to sell? Like, well, what's going on there? Now, their starting pitching has definitely kept them in it. Matt Walker Buehler has been amazing for them. Tony Gonsolin has been good when he's played. Julio Urias has been fantastic when he's been there. Clayton Kershaw has been good. And they have enough depth to get through this. But I think the Dodgers have learned the correct lesson from all these injuries, which is you just cannot have enough good players. They do not want to be starting Albert Pujols at first base in the first game of the NLCS. So they are making the necessary moves to get there. So I am going to say reality. The Los Angeles Dodgers are, in fact, World Series bound. Now, the other big trade that we have to respond to, of course, we had the Scherzer-Trey Turner trade, but also last night during the NBA draft, Russell Westbrook was traded to the Los Angeles Lakers for Montrezl Harrell, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Kyle Kuzma, as well as some additional draft picks. So a pretty interesting question here today that I'm going to toss to you, George. Fantasy or reality, Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis create LeBron's best big three that he's ever been a part of?
Now, isn't this recency bias? I mean, this is what I mean, yeah. I mean, it's certainly close. I don't want to say it's the best because, once again, we sort of forget what LeBron's done in the past with Miami. I mean, that being said, Anthony Davis, really good player. Once again, when healthy, Russell Westbrook, I'll say yes, but I feel like this is recency bias. So I'll say reality here, but I feel like, once again, because it's happening now. Where if we knew this 3 years ago, 5 years ago, we'd be like, oh, no. The big three back then were just as good, if not better. You know, so I'll say reality, but this smacks of recency bias to me.
I think you are completely right. And this has been a point that I have been very consistent about on the show the entire time that I've been doing it with Craig. People just really do not appreciate how good Chris Bosh was. And that is true both when he was with Toronto and when he was a member of the Miami Heat. I mean, some of his last seasons in Toronto, he was shooting, 50-55% true shooting and scoring 24 points a night while having 10 rebounds. I mean, these were Anthony Davis numbers, but then you have to remember that not only was he putting up 25 and 10, but he was also doing it while shooting, 30% from three, which was absolutely massive. I mean, the years that he was in Miami, he took a huge step back in terms of his touches on offense, but remained, I mean, just was so amazing, especially at his age 28 and 29 seasons. He was so good for those teams. And of course, no one is going to debate that, is Dwayne Wade better than Russell Westbrook? Look, I love Russell Westbrook. Nobody loves Russell Westbrook more than I do. I've been a fan of his since he was a rookie for the Oklahoma City Thunder when we didn't even know what the team was going to be called when they drafted Russell Westbrook. But this is a reality. The best big three that LeBron ever played with was Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade when he was a member of the Miami Heat. Now, a little bit lighter-hearted here. To give you some background, George, Brett and I, our producer Brett Levy and I, have both been trying to buy houses over the last couple months. I was finally able to get mine done about 2 months ago. Brett is actually taking the day off right now to go close on his house. Now, given what, and you're not an expert here, but given what you know about me and given what you know about Brett, do you think that Brett's house closing will be quicker than mine, fantasy or reality?
Well, I mean, what are we talking about quicker? Quicker with the signings, quicker because if things go right as far as, as everything well goes well with the house. And when I had my closing for my house, I had to delay mine a couple of weeks because the old owners didn't get rid of everything. The garage is full of interesting stuff like pinball machines and stuff like that. That's why it was interesting stuff. They would have left it there. I probably wouldn't have complained. So I'm going to say, Davis, I think I'm going to go with you, that yours will be smoother. Just when I know Brett more, a little bit more than you, so I'm going to go that yours will be smoother here. But listen, I wish nothing but the best for you both. Buying a house, big thing, biggest purchase you'll ever make probably in your life here, and you want it to be smooth. I assume both of you are planning on living here, living in your house for quite a long time. So best of luck to you both. But if I had to place a wager here, I would say that yours will be smoother.
Well, I guess I don't know the specifics because I haven't talked to Brett today. I don't know how much he is battling on it, but mine was a gigantic hassle because the person who approved my mortgage, right? So they locked me in my 3.3%. They're like, okay, you know, look, it all looks good. We'll give you this loan. But then you have to underwrite everything. You have to get all your money documented. And if you make any sort of your money from gambling, DFS, sports betting, crypto, things like that, the banks absolutely love to give you the hardest possible time. So every single day, I'm sending emails to my mortgage agent. I'm getting him all these kind of spreadsheets. You know, I'm emailing FanDuel saying, hey, guys, can you send me some documentation? Can you send me some spreadsheets? And it was a whole gigantic hassle. But once we got past that, it was actually pretty straightforward, and you are so right. I hope that I live in this house for like another 20 years because moving is the absolute worst, George. I don't ever want to move again, and I even paid movers this time. And you know, I'm a grown up now. I moved. I paid movers to do it, and it was still such a gigantic hassle. You remember when you're in college and you move every single year, you get an apartment with one buddy, then an apartment with another buddy, and you're in the dorm and you're out of the dorm. I never, ever want to do that again for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I've moved at least 6 times in my life that I can think of. I've been in this house now since 06, 07 actually, so I don't think I'm moving again. If I do move, it'll be down like everybody else in New York to Florida to get a little warmer here. But I remember moving. I'll give you a little funny little quick little story. A friend of mine was moving into Hofstra, you know, into a dorm there, but he couldn't be part of the move. He couldn't be part of the move because he was in Florida. So we moved him in for him, but he packed nothing. And listen, we were all about 20 years old at the time. You're telling a bunch of guys to move you and you've packed nothing. We literally just grabbed his stuff and opened the door and threw it in. We didn't care. We're at Atlanta. Yeah, your stuff's in there. Good luck with you. You know, if you're not going to pack it, we're not going to pack for you. We're not going to fold your clothes here. So when he got to his room, well, his stuff was there. But I don't even want to know what that room looked like at that time. It was a mess.
Okay, here's a question for you. You live in New York, right? Is moving in New York the worst thing imaginable in the world? Because like I am thinking about myself, I get kind of claustrophobic in big cities. And I've been to New York, I've been to LA, I've been to all these places, and like it's fine, but I get a little claustrophobic and stuff in big cities. And I am imagining a hot, wet New York summer's day. I just am imagining moving in New York in the summer, and I'm like, this is the worst thing on earth. Like I don't think I could be paid to help someone move in New York.
Listen, as far as, you know, stuff's heavy, stuff like that, I live on the island, so I'm not worried about the claustrophobic, but the worst part of the move is with any house. With my brother's moves in Queens, they got these narrow little staircases you got to go up, man, to move stuff in. It's like, are you kidding me here? And he did it during the hottest days of the year, like 95 degrees out. I wanted to kill him. I wanted to kill anybody I could get my hands on here. It was the worst thing ever. You want to die after a while. Literally, my buddy and I, we were relaxing by the air conditioner, just drinking after carrying 2 sets of things up. He had his bed outside. We put his bed on the outside grass and we just relax out there. Moving sucks. It's a necessary evil in life, but it sucks. And I'm that idiot, by the way, where if you ask me to help you move, I say yes, because people have helped me through the years. They've helped me. I just pay it forward, do the favor. So yes, I help people move as well.
Well, you are definitely a saint, George, because when my friends ask me to help move, unless I really love you, unless you're really my friend, I'm not going to help you move. I mean, I would honest to God, I would rather give my friend $50 or $100 to go pay for a mover than go spend my day and get paid, you know, eating pizza and drinking beer. So that's how I feel about it. Everyone, we are going to go ahead and run into our final break here on Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid TV. Of course, stay tuned after our show, Pharrell Coast to Coast. And we'll be back in a few moments with the Sports Grid 60 here on Fantasy Sports Today. Stay tuned and don't miss it.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our final segment here of the day on Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid TV. I'm Davis Maddock, joined in our final segment here by my buddy, George Kurtz. Of course, we always end the show with the Sports Grid 60. And George, you get a sub in, tap in right now. If you got a take you've been wanting to get off your chest, the floor is yours for the Sports Grid 60.
All right, so we were talking about the baseball trade deadline. Now I'm a Yankee fan. And sometimes I believe when you're a GM of a team, you know, you need to realize, you need to believe what the team is telling you. The Yankees have been telling Cashman they're not good. They're not good. Yet you go out and you make these two trades. Listen, I don't mind the trades. You bring in Gallo, you bring in Rizzo. Do you really think this is going to change things? This team cannot hit with runs in scoring position. They cannot play the game right. Gallo and Rizzo will make the lineup better, but they're not a World Series team this year. They're not. Believe what they're telling you. Cole has been up and down now since really the spin rate. You know, when you can't put the tacky stuff, the Gorilla Glue and the Spider Tack and everything else, you can't put this on your hands anymore. He hasn't been the same guy. Believe what they're telling you. This is not your year. I wish the Yankees wouldn't have given up. I wouldn't say their top prospects, but a lot of good depth prospects for Gallo and Rizzo. This is not their year.
I think you're right. I was just telling Craig the other day, we can end with this. I can do my little Yankee spiel. I was just telling Craig the other day, all season long, George, I've been telling him Judge is going to get it together. Stan's going to get it together. Glaber's going to get it together. And they're all going to get hot at the same time. Cause the Yankees problem has been, they haven't all got hot at the same time, but I'm actually going to disagree with your take. It's the freaking New York Yankees. The Yankees cannot stand pat at the deadline and not do anything. They have so much money. I mean, the Yankees have just as much money as the Dodgers do, and don't ever let the Yankees tell you that they don't. Their TV network and their TV distribution is worth so much money. So them not making a move is not an option, right? Not adding a left-handed power bat, not adding an option. And, you know, especially over the next 3 hours, I would be so shocked if they don't add a starting pitcher. All right, everyone, that's going to do it for us here today. Of course, for Craig Mish, thank you so much for joining us. George, thank you for hopping on. Everyone over at LTN, James and Connell, appreciate it. And everyone will be back on Monday for Fantasy Sports Today. Stay tuned to Sports Grid.